You are listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. This is a public affair, and I'm your host, Shannon Young. Colorado's Front Range region has a very active community of endurance athletes, and it also has a significant subculture of cannabis enthusiasts. But how much do the two groups overlap? More than you may imagine. That's according to Runner's High, a new book by journalist and runner Josiah Hesse. The author is my guest on today's program. Welcome to KGNU, Josiah.
Thanks for having me, Shannon.
Start off by explaining the main points of your book.
Well, it seeks to sort of uncover what has been going on for a long time in professional sports, but also just throughout human history, that people have been using cannabis for a variety of reasons in conjunction with physical activity, either before, during, or after that physical activity. And then there's larger revelations, you know, such as that our evolutionary reward system, which makes activities like eating, sleeping, having sex, pleasurable, exercise definitely belongs in that category. And we have mechanisms in our body that we've had throughout the history of our species that make exercise pleasurable, and that it's a natural form of cannabis, an endogenous cannabinoid that gives us that sense of pleasure with exercise. Whether you're consuming marijuana or not, everyone has felt that sensation. And so research is showing that cannabis could be a key to unlocking that mechanism for people who have a difficult time enjoying exercise, which if you look at the numbers, seems to be quite a large volume of people in this country.
That was a very detailed response, and we will dig into some of those points later in this interview. But at first, I want to confess that when I first heard of the premise of your book, I was a bit skeptical. What reaction did you encounter among publishers when this was in the pitch stage?
When it was in the pitch stage, and earlier I had written a handful of articles on this, so I'd been through a number of cycles of people scratching their heads and just not really sure what to make of this reporting. But when we went around, me and my agent, to pitch the book, there were a number of people who were, if not baffled, downright angry at the suggestion that they would publish a book like this, or that they would, you know, in their words, fall for this concept as if this was some sort of prank that we were pulling on people. But in the book, there's enough research to show that this is very, very popular among professional and amateur athletes, and that there's some very exciting science behind it. So when people were, you know, laughing us out of the room, I knew that we had the science on our side, and that most of the assumptions that people were making about cannabis and who uses it and why they use it and what effect it has on them are based on erroneous stereotypes that were never really taken seriously, or at least weren't in the scientific community. They were in the media and in the government and in popular culture, but the whole lazy stoner trope, I've always felt confident, is completely ridiculous and not tethered to reality.
And I think perhaps many people who are not a part of the runner culture, their most recent exposure to the crossover between cannabis use by elite runners was the case of Sha'Carri Richardson, who was unable to participate in the Olympics after THC was found in her system. A lot of the discourse on social media also mirrored what you mentioned of being laughed out of the room. There were examples of jokes about how cannabis could not be considered a performance-enhancing drug or aid, really, in the act of running in any way. What were your thoughts in the wake of this scandal?
Well, I thought it was terribly tragic because Sha'Carri Richardson was such a bright, shining star in the world of running and the Olympics, you know, before any of this had happened. She'd just been a very impressive, very captivating person. So it was very tragic for her, thinking about all the work that goes into, you know, getting to the Olympics, and then for something so ridiculous and antiquated to keep her from that goal. Just seems absolutely devastating. But at the same time, I'm glad that it sparked a lot of conversation around this topic, and people from all sides, all perspectives on this issue are suddenly, you know, confronted with different people's opinions and different perspectives on this. And that's really been the case. You know, it hasn't been in the public eye so much in the public discourse, but behind the scenes, people have been discussing where cannabis belongs in terms of regulation in sports for a very long time. And there's been this sort of conflicting messages about, you know, on the one hand, it is a performance enhancing substance. And on the other hand, it's, you know, has a deleterious effect on performance, you know, or, you know, people bring up that it's a, you know, you're a bad role model for children if you use cannabis. And that's something that WADA cites in their own language, in their own writing, you know, that it violates, the, in their words, the spirit of the sport. And that's why it should be a banned substance. So there's been like no consistent messaging on why this is banned or what we should think about it as a, you know, a general public that idolizes athletes. And do we really, does anyone honestly think that cannabis should be in the same league as steroids, that it should, you know, nobody's arguing that it will take you beyond your natural limits in the same way that steroids do. It's not going to make your muscles swell beyond their genetic limits or beyond the limits of your training. It's simply going to bring the body back to a state of balance, you know, in terms of pain or anxiety or inflammation. So it's nothing, it's not going to provide anything that a number of other far more harmful substances that aren't banned aren't going to provide.
And on the topic of role models and rejection of this idea that athletes use cannabis, in your book, you looked into the use of cannabis by famous athletes, not just in runners, but also with NBA and NFL. What did you find?
Yeah, I spoke with people from a number of different fields. And while this isn't anything that should be considered, you know, an exhaustive academic research, from the people that I spoke with, and these were both active and retired athletes, depending on the sport, you know, in something like the PGA, you know, these pro golfers, I've been told half of them are using cannabis in some form before, during, or after performance. When it comes to the NFL or NBA, I've heard people put that number at 70, 80, 90%. And definitely that's the case with trail running and ultra marathon running for a variety of different reasons, depending on the discipline. You know, for endurance running, there's a whole number of reasons to use it. But in that case, you know, it can provide some sort of mental lift after you've been running for 8 or 10 or 20, 30 hours. You know, these people are tackling like 200 mile races. And so, you know, that could provide a sort of mental lift, a little bit of joy when you're in that pain cave, as they call it. But for, you know, like bodybuilders who need to be eating around the clock, it could be an appetite stimulant, and it can also, you know, reduce inflammation in the joints. And one thing it does that no other substance does in terms of treating pain is it changes our emotional relationship to pain. In a way that we can still observe an injury or any kind of ailment, but have a different emotional relationship to that pain. And the list goes on and on in terms of the applications that cannabis has. But it's been a kind of open secret for people in athletics that the majority of professional athletes are using it. They have ways to get around drug tests, or sometimes they don't, in the case of Shikari Richardson. But that was one of the reasons that I felt this urgency to write this book, because people are, on the one hand, maintaining these very outdated stereotypes about people who use cannabis and their level of functionality or ambition or physical activity on the one hand, and I'm watching all of these sports stars every Sunday on the TV and having no idea that a good deal of them most likely are under the influence of cannabis while they're performing in that game.
And we're at a state in time where some areas of the country remain under prohibition and others, like Colorado, marijuana use is legal. what have you found are the differences in scientific research, medical research, athletic research into the use of cannabis in different parts of the country?
Well, the interesting thing about cannabis science over the last century in America is with prohibition and with ever increasing laws against cannabis, we've really narrowed the scope of what researchers can do in terms of the types of studies they do and the cannabis that they use for them. Most studies traditionally that try to look at any positive effect of cannabis aren't going to get funding or approval from NIDA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse. And the DEA has been monitoring and regulating the cannabis that can be studied at these universities. It can only come out of the University of Mississippi, and they have very low quality cannabis. You know, I don't think it can reach anywhere beyond like 7 or 9% THC, and most products you find in a dispensary are anywhere from like 15 to 25 to 30% THC. And this cannabis is freeze dried and rehydrated, and it's just practically a different substance altogether. So there hasn't really been great science, but that is changing. And I participated in a study at CU Boulder where they did have some interesting pageantry for us to go through to allow them to study cannabis without threatening their federal funding or just getting them in trouble with the federal government in general. But there is a lot of research showing that cannabis users exercise more than people who don't use cannabis, that they have lower rates of obesity, lower rates of diabetes, lower rates of cancer, and that a lot of people who work out in legalized states, there was one survey that came out of CU Boulder that looked at people in legalized states who exercised, examining their exercise habits, and they included a question about cannabis on there. And 80% of respondents said they were using cannabis before, during, or after their workouts regularly. So this is something that science is now justifying, validating this behavior that's been going on for a very long time. And then there's been loads of fascinating research into the organic runner's high and how it does come from this endogenous cannabinoid inside of us called anandamide. Comes from the Sanskrit word for bliss. For a long time, people always thought it was endorphins. People, you know, would often say when they're working out, my endorphins are kicking in. That's what's changing my mood. It's actually not. It's a form of cannabis that our bodies produce naturally. And research is showing that THC, a phytocannabinoid inside of marijuana, can induce this system quicker and more effectively. So people can achieve this bliss from exercise much quicker if they use a little bit of cannabis, at least in most cases. I don't want to go off and say that this is for everyone and it works the same for everyone, because that's definitely not the case. But there's a lot of exciting research showing that this could be the key to getting Americans to exercise more and to enjoy it more.
And you did a significant amount of scientific explanation in your book, and I was going to ask you more in detail about anandamide. That's a brand new word to me that I the whole concept that we have this natural cannabis or cannabinoids like within our brain. Get more a bit into that. The anandamide, like you touched on what it is, but for people who are just hearing this for the first time and thought, of course, you know, endorphins were responsible for the runner's high. What is it that is in our brain that is making us produce cannabis? And what's the evolutionary role behind that?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that I found most exciting and made me want to research this book. So we all have a reward system, like I mentioned before, sleep, food, sex, the things that excite our dopamine system and make us want to engage in that behavior more often. And exercise should be in that category, at least it is from an evolutionary standpoint. And there was a book that came out a few years ago called Born to Run that was very popular and sort of spawned this barefoot running craze and looked into all this research showing that we evolved as distance runners, humans did, that we're not the fastest animal on the planet, but we're one of the best endurance runners. And that we have this body that allowed us to chase down gazelles over long distances and basically just wear them down until they could be attacked and eaten. And this is sort of widely accepted research, but I followed some people who worked on those studies, and they went a little farther to look at the emotional effects of long distance running, the runner's high that people have been talking about throughout the 20th century after the big running boom of the 70s. And their research showed that it came about around 30 minutes of cardio going at around 70% of maximum heart rate. So there's a little window that you can either go too fast and miss it or go too slow and not really get it. But 30 minutes, 70% heart rate, anandamide is released, this neurotransmitter in our brains that acts a lot like THC on the brain. And that also excites our dopamine system and gives us a little emotional boost. But anandamide provides a boost in and of itself. And so this is something that, you know, just like with the barefoot running and how we have, you know, this anatomy that seems to be perfect for running, we also have this system where when we're exhausted physically and when we're mentally fatigued to the point of feeling some kind of despair or hopelessness and make you not want to continue, we have this system that kicks in after so long that gives us a little reduction in pain and an uplift in mood. And this is something we can stimulate somewhat artificially in that we're not, you know, chasing gazelles through the savannah to try and get our lunch, but we artificially excite our evolutionary reward system all the time with all sorts of behavior that has nothing to do with our survival. So we have this system in us that, just like the feeling we get from eating chocolate cake or salty potato chips or, you know, a good night's sleep, we should be able to feel, say, a reduction in anxiety or depression and an uptick in optimism and energy and enthusiasm for the day by engaging in a small amount of exercise. And I think that it's sort of a key part of the statement that you do a small amount of exercise. I think in both the case of cannabis and exercise, people tend to go a bit overboard with either of them and miss a lot of the emotional benefits by, you know, just over consuming. I think moderation is something my generation is getting much better at applying to their lives than the previous generations did.
I am speaking with Josiah Hesse, Denver-based journalist and author of Runner's High, How a Movement of Cannabis-Fueled Athletes is Changing the Science of Sports. A lot of this book is based in and around Denver, Boulder, the mountain towns. Is that due specifically to the high concentration of elite runners who live in this area? Or is it also because of the runners who incorporate cannabis into their exercise regimen?
It's hard to say. I imagine it's a variety of factors, particularly the ones you listed, because culturally it does seem like we live in some kind of a bubble in Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, in a way that's very different when you head out east or to the south. And that's true with cannabis, but it's also true with running. And there are divisions between the ultramarathon running world. You know, there's this term dirtbag or van life that are going around that sort of encapsulate a whole way of life that's much more, dirty and off the grid and more sort of camping centric and a bit more hippie than the road running world, which is much bigger, much more well-funded, much more mainstream. In Colorado and those other states I mentioned out west have a sort of counterculture history that bleeds into the history of the running boom of the 70s. You know, after Frank Shorter won the 72 Olympic marathon gold, he moved back to Boulder, you know, and this that's not the only factor, but it was one of the big ones that kind of created this running community out here, along with the Leadville 100 and the Hard Rock 100. That just sort of bled in with the organic granola wellness culture of Boulder and Aspen in the 70s and 80s. And I guess through to today, there's a lot of money in those towns now, which tend to crush underground culture. But yeah, there are definitely some big divides between the road running and trail running world. And I think cannabis is not necessarily one of those things that divides them, but is kind of a marker for where you can tell where people land along those lines.
Towards the front of your book, you described games that explicitly permitted the use of cannabis that are based here in Boulder. I believe they're called the 420 games. Tell us a bit about that. And is it the only tournament of its kind?
Yeah, well, I attended the 420 games in Boulder, but it travels around the country, or at least it did. I think they're looking to get it started back up. COVID kind of put events for the most part in a state of hiatus. I know some events are going forward, but something like this, I think they're still figuring out how to move forward with it. And it had a race-like aspects to it. That's where I met Avery Collins, this famous ultramarathon runner, and he ran in this fun run. He sort of led the front of the pack with this fun run around the Boulder Reservoir. But at the same time, I don't think it was much of a competitive event in the way that most sporting events are, where people are just so serious. I mean, and their careers are at stake, you know, when it comes to, you know, their time or any sort of violations that are thrown at them. The 420 games was more just like a fun party for stoner athletes. And I don't mean that, you know, pejoratively. I just mean like it wasn't so competition focused. And I think there may be more competitive cannabis events come up in the future, or, you know, competitive events that already exist that are going to incorporate cannabis more, because after federal legalization collapses, there's going to be this surge of money going through this industry. And suddenly, you know, I don't think any sporting event is going to be able to say no. You know, we're going to be in like Gatorade territory when it comes to sponsorship dollars from this industry. So I imagine it's going to have a role in mainstream sports. Currently, I've been really interested in putting together a sort of marijuana marathon to gather together all the different cannabis companies that are creating products for athletes, because it's become a very big thing lately, seeing sort of electrolyte drinks that are infused with THC or CBD, which wasn't the case years ago. So I think the cannabis industry itself is getting wise to the fact that a lot of people are using this in conjunction with physical activity. But at the moment, who knows what's happening with events.
And what has been reaction locally to your book?
I'm hearing from a lot of people who feel like they've been validated. A lot of people who said, or who are saying, I've been doing this for decades. I've been doing this since the 80s, but I was too afraid to tell anybody about it because the running world, or just the athletics world in general, can be so conservative, and this can be such a divisive issue. So people are really excited to see that it's not just them, that there are so many others who are doing it, and that there's so much science that sort of pulling back the curtain and revealing what's going on in our brains and bodies when we combine cannabis with physical activity.
Well, Josiah Hesse, thank you so much for your time today. I wanted to just give you the last word in case there was anything that you wanted to touch on that I didn't ask.
I'll just say one more time that exercise does not have to be painful or any kind of discipline or anything to get to. It can be a fun, playful act that is its own reward.